and I can't get through the streets of the Pines, then, like, what am I going to do? Just turn around?
Turn around.
I don't know what they're doing over there.
You know, if you were a nicer guy, you'd probably have a neighbor. You could just call and say, hey, how's the neighborhood? But, you know, you're the old Grinch that lives down at the end of the road that has the beware of dog signs. He doesn't even have a dog.
I do have a neighbor, and he loves me, and that's my guy. And he has also went to UL Lafayette.
Oh, right.
The same school as I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's my neighbor. Yeah. And so I did text him about the neighborhood.
Okay, so
and he did respond to me, and he said they haven't plowed yet. How can you not
plow?
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to, you know, light a fire on someone's rear end over there in Castle Pines. Let's go, wake up.
Now, you don't have something outside on your fence saying beware of dog and don't have dogs, do you?
No, I got a little micro sheepadoodle. So, yeah, I got a little one.
Vicious.
Vicious.
No soliciting,
vicious.
Huh?
No soliciting. Don't come to my house.
I got one.
I don't want anybody coming up to my house. I ain't gonna lie. No.
I feel you.
Don't
except for the snowplow guy.
Yeah, no, that's me.
Oh, well, that's your fault.
I'm doing the driveway.
Well, it's your fault that the roads aren't cleared then.
Well,
you got your snowblower. Tell Lana to get out there.
Oh, wow. Goodness gracious.
So the HOA, do they make you guys shovel you guys' sidewalks at least?
No sidewalks by me. Okay. So I don't have any sidewalks by me.
He's got a moat.
It's
a moat around his
boat, and I pull up the bridge.
That's right.
Just the driveway, man. I just got to take care of the driveway. But
the drawbridge.
We were down here last night.
Yeah,
hanging out down here.
Sounds like you guys had a nice sleepover last night,
which was great. Yeah. So didn't have to really worry about the snow. I just, you know, we're just looking outside. Haven't been out there in a while, but not too bad.
No, it's not. And, you know, the roads are all clear. Now it's a little slushy. You know,
slushy. Yeah,
but
yeah.
All right, just please.
Are we supposed to be getting some more?
Yeah,
that's what we're hearing. Is that the worst of it, apparently, is coming tonight.
Tonight?
That's what they're telling me.
Right.
Although, I felt like I tempted the weather gods enough yesterday with all my fake snow totals. So
dude, I almost text you when you guys were talking. I'm like,
enough.
I'm preparing now just because of how anti you are of this. He was like, it's not even going to snow. It's rain.
It's going to be a little rain. No worries. No, I woke up to a lot of snow. But the roads are fine. It's too warm. It's not cold enough to really be overly sticking to the roads. Now the side roads out there, that's where it gets a little greasy, for sure. That got a little sketch this morning in the old work van.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to the truckers though. The truckers are out there plowing the snow,
and even
the trucks out there moving the snow around.
Yeah.
So
you know why they haven't been to Castle Rock in your neighborhood yet? Because they've got other places to be. They've got to clear through traffic for the rest of Colorado. You over there worrying about yourself. Think about the common man, Stoke.
No comment.
No comment.
Stoke's over there in Castle Rock on the highest mountain.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so talk to me. You guys, I heard, had quite the soiree last night. You closed down the old Barsky over there.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what you saw, because we had two really, really impressive performances, Nuggets and Avs.
I mean, the Avs, to me, was more impressive. How they came back from 3-0 to Vancouver.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't playing some a bad team there. So you're behind the 8-ball 3-0, and you come back, and you're able to get it to overtime and win it. But that goal with 3 seconds left, it looked like it was 1.4 seconds left to go in the second. That was it. I mean, you don't score a goal there, you're not going to come back and beat that team. They found a way to get the puck in the net, and then they do what they did in the third, man. And so to me, against a really good hockey team, to be able to come back from that deficit, that was two thumbs up. Very, very impressive and encouraging.
Yeah, the win for the Avs was absolutely outstanding. I will say the takeaway from the Nuggets, though, is, and we talked about it earlier, of when their opponent turns it on, or you know, they give their full effort, it just engages the Nuggets. And they're better than everyone else. So the best effort put forth from the opponent brings out the best from the Denver Nuggets, and they're unbeatable when they're like that. And that's what I saw last night with Miami. And they started hot, let Miami hang around. I thought the bench was pretty well again last night, keeping a
24 bench points in 100, what they score, 100 points and a 24 off the bench.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's rare for the Denver Nuggets right now.
But it was like, what, 6.5, where the bench kind of like sputtered for a little while and then turned it on?
You're right, Phil.
I mean, they missed like 4 straight threes in that second quarter, and that's what allowed Miami to get back in it.
That's exactly right, because the Nuggets got off to a really good start last night. The bench just didn't pull their weight. But in the second half, How do we convince Christian Brown that he's playing against the Miami Heat every night? Because he's a different guy. He's aggressive. He doesn't think twice. You could see him thinking out there on the floor offensively sometimes, but against Miami, he's just got to let it fly, and he's the best version of himself. I think that's some really good tape to kind of clip it, bottle it, and take it with you type of situation. And also, Reggie Jackson, that moment at the end of the game where, you know, he comes off the bench and Jamal and KCP are telling Malone, come on, man. Let him go. And that comes on the heels of the, was it the Utah game or the Toronto game where Jokic came back in with 4:30 left?
It was Utah, right?
Yeah. He brings him in with 4:30 left, and then he takes that weird whack on the hand from John Collins.
He was shaking it. And
like, that's a risk you don't need, and you've got a 17-point lead. And I thought Michael Malone's players last night did him a solid and said, Coach, you know what? We don't. You can rely on those guys too, and you can give us a night off.
But he put in Jamal again late with a couple minutes left in the game, and at that point he's stretching, and it's like they're not going to lose this game, Michael Malone. They're not going to lose it. They're just not. You know, it's not like it's a 6-point game. He's still up by like 10. He just gets so nervous, the guy's been sitting what's felt like 20 minutes of real time.
It was a mistake.
And now you're going to put him back. He's had other injuries. Just at that point, once you commit to sitting him that long, you just got to let it run its course and just keep him on the bench.
You don't cash that bet out.
You know what I mean?
Like,
no, you don't.
I love that you brought up that he's stretching. Because there he is on the bench stretching, and we're talking about, okay, here's a guy with shin splints, and he's with the knee injuries,
He was trying to tell Malone something. Hey, man, if I got to stretch, don't put me back out there.
He's looking like Billy Hoyle, getting ready for his pickup
game. But, Josh, to what you said about them being unbeatable, they're unbeatable, of course, but especially when someone like MPJ is averaging the 20 points now. Like, where has that been all along, right, this year? All of a sudden, he comes off that All-Star break, and maybe he went and did some, you know, Wusan or drinking some good juju. He's firing, man, on all cylinders, which is great to see.
I got to share some news with you guys.
Oh, hit us.
Uh-oh.
The list of potential Broncos quarterbacks got shorter.
Oh. Can I guess? Hold on, let's guess. Yeah. So let's say who else on the board? Okay, so Jimmy G's on the board. Ryan Tannehill's on the board. We've got the tradable guys. Because that's pretty much it for the free agents, right?
You've
got Easton Stick, maybe, or Brian Hoyer, maybe the small guys. Because even Josh Johnson re-signed in Baltimore today. So the tradable guys, Ritter went to Arizona for Rondale Moore. So now you've got Zach Wilson. Now you've got
Justin Fields. Maybe Sam Howell.
And maybe Sam Howell.
Those three.
Ryan Tannehill, for me, is who my guess is.
For real?
That is off the list.
Garoppolo.
I don't know, man, at this point.
It's Sam.
Really?
Sam Howell just got traded from Washington to Seattle. Seattle's going to get Howell, a fourth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick. The Commanders are getting a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick.
Okay.
That's a great deal for Washington.
And guess what, man? I heard that Zach Wilson put his house up for sale.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't do that a long time ago.
He was holding out hope.
I guess.
Well, I think when you look at Sam Howell, I mean, you're picking a quarterback at number two.
Yeah.
So he was your young quarterback last year in his second year, and now he's done. Mm. So you can move up in two rounds from a fourth rounder to a third rounder, from a fifth rounder to a fourth rounder, and you're turning the page on him anyway and going with either Jaden Daniels or May.
Yeah.
Drake May.
Mariota also just signed there, 1 year, $8 million.
Yeah.
And I was telling Phil, speculation.
You got $8 million?
You got $8 million. That's why the Broncos.
Quarterbacks,
man. I'm telling you, that is why the Broncos have not made a move. That's why they haven't made a move.
You could have got Mason Rudolph for 3.5.
But they figured, did you read Kliss's report? Kliss's report, I know you guys just talked to him, but he put the line in his report that I thought was interesting when referencing Mason Rudolph, that Jarrett Stidham has had more recent success, which, and maybe that was on Kliss's part, or maybe that was the Broncos' reasoning, but, I mean, do we not remember Mason Rudolph finishing last season on a pretty solid high note for him personally after doing nothing?
Three
wins into the playoffs.
That's more than Jarrett Stidham's ever done, right?
I don't think Jarrett Stidham has ever had success.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to make sure.
He won against the Chargers.
I mean, against Easton Stick.
Some small success. Yeah,
he beat a guy that's named after a hockey stick.
So
Sam's gone now.
Yeah.
All right, so that means that more signs are pointing towards they're definitely in the first round for a quarterback here.
I think it's quarterback roulette in the first round.
Whoever's there,
brother. Are they going to move up?
That's the thing. They might move up. They might move back. But for me right now,
Bo Nix,
with what you're seeing, they are definitely taking a quarterback in the first round.
It feels a lot like Bo Nix.
Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, or Penix. I don't think they really care.
So we did this experiment yesterday, and we tried to figure out what the cost would be to move up from 12 to 6. Apparently, we had to go back to actually the 2021 draft with Micah Parsons.
Okay.
So I think it was the Cowboys or the Eagles traded for 12 because that's where Micah Parsons ended up, you know, getting selected. I can't remember. We're gonna have to pull it back up who they traded with at 6. But essentially, what it all resulted
was it the Giants?
It might have been the Giants, Phil. It might have been the Giants. I'm gonna have to go back and look up the team they traded for. But essentially, they moved 12 next year's first and a third that same year. So a 1 and a 3 in that draft, and then a 1 next year to move from 12 to 6. Mm. So if you want J.J. McCarthy, a comparable at least asking price might be 12 overall, next year's first, and at least 1/3 this year.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Are you willing to do that, Stokes?
Yeah.
Mm. You give up next year's first?
Yeah, I'm willing to do it if you love him. Mm.
That's what
my biggest objective right now for 2024 is find a quarterback. Got to find a quarterback. And if Sean Payton loves him, okay, let's go get the quarterback. Now, if you don't love the guy, then no, I don't want to do that. Of course I don't. I don't want to give away another first-round pick, but we need a quarterback. And so I want something to be happy about this year. I want something to watch and to, like at least bring us to the stadium. And some excitement, like, we got J.J. McCarthy. Okay, let's take a look at this guy. So
if they move up, then I told Matt they love a quarterback. But if they move down, like, I think Matt is okay with them doing, they don't love that quarterback. They don't love any quarterbacks in that.
That's right.
And now we're going to be sitting here kind of sad for this year because they're just picking anybody.
But I go back to the Andy Dufresne. The Andy Dufresne. Sometimes the best way out is through.
Yeah.
That ought to be our slogan for training camp 2024. The best way out is through. Because what else you got to do? I mean, that was essentially what they told us yesterday was their plan at the beginning of free agency. They're taking the 52 this year. It's the responsible thing to do. They're rebuilding, and that's what they're telling us. And I've actually kind of seen this collection, and we talked to the text line yesterday about this too, this collection of Broncos country saying, finally. They're rebuilding, which I didn't really think existed in the droves that it did. But a bunch of people and numbers came to the forefront yesterday where I thought you and I were a bit surprised going, okay, people really understand what's going on around here and are ready to turn the page.
They've seen them do it the same way, to put a Band-Aid on it. Oh, veteran quarterback's going to pop. They're going to figure it out with this guy. They've seen them do that and fail at it 6-7 different times in an 8-year period. I think people are just say, try something else. Yeah. And we'll be on board with that. And that's why I wouldn't do the trade-up, because I'm all in on 25. Like, I want draft capital. I want financial capability.
You want the trade down.
Yeah, I'm trading back out of 12.
Same page. That's at least me. But I understand where Stokes coming from because, you know, you got to give it a crack at some point. And if it doesn't work, I wonder if it doesn't work, are you that pot committed to that guy where you don't go back to the well next year if it's not a fit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure, but time will tell, certainly. Good show, boys. We enjoyed it.
Appreciate
good
y'all.
Stuff with Kliss. Have a fun round two tonight, no question. And Stoke, best of luck digging yourself out. Maybe the dog can help you. Phil and I will break down the Nuggets. They beat the Heat in South Beach last night, 100-88. Number one in the NBA post All-Star break. We'll give you all the details next. Let's get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get good afternoon. Let's Matt Smith in for Zach By today. Again, maybe for the last day. I don't know. I heard a bunch of flights got canceled at DIA. So
yeah,
I'm guessing not, but you never know. CP baby back tomorrow. Maybe he'll sprout some wings and fly everybody home.
You know, I don't know. I talked to OZB yesterday, and he said that they already reminded him that some flights may be getting canceled.
Mm-hmm. Or so. Was that just him, you know, planting the story ahead of time? Because any good lie requires a ground story, and you got to start laying it down ahead of time, right? Because that's what you don't want to be catching people out of the blue. If you've got something that's coming and they know it's coming, it's like, hey, buddy. I'm looking at this weather, and they're telling me it doesn't look good.
Manifesting it, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Zach's not like that, though. He itches when he misses days. So,
Yeah.
That's the type of guy
Zach
is.
He goes wild.
Oh, for sure.
He's already upset.
And I'll tell you something. Based upon what we've got to talk about today, I know it's killing him. So let's get right into it. Nuggets last night, 100-88 over Miami. Game started right before we got off the air. 5:30 tip-off. and a little present from our friends across the street. Nobody knew that it was going to be blacked out on ESPN.
We didn't know. We were sitting here enjoying it, and all of a sudden, cut. What?
Really looking forward to that being over. And the press conference that they just held last week, some encouraging comments. Yeah. So either way, still sucks. I mean, it's year five, and I felt for a lot of people. The text line started getting flooded up at 303-713-1043. Why is the game blacked out? It's like, yeah, I get it.
You're like, Matt, you lied to us. Well, you lied to us.
They typically don't do ESPN games, yeah. And so that's why I think it was a little bit surprising. But those of us who did get a chance to watch saw the Nuggets extend their NBA best post-All-Star record to 10-1 last night.
Let's go. They're doing great, man. They're on fire. They're untouchable. They're the best team in the NFL, the NBA. Man.
They might be the best team in the NFL, too, well, honestly, here. At this stage. Well, for sure. They're definitely the best NFL team.
You see
team
some
here.
Of the throws Jokic does at times.
He's the real QB1 in Denver. We all know. I mean, we all understand that.
Uh-oh, Stidham versus Jokic.
Stidham doesn't stand a chance. I wouldn't wish that on Jokic for all the tea in China, though. I'll just say that. How about this? So the Nuggets walk into Miami, into South Beach, and we talked about it. Would they be a little bit maybe distracted based upon the fact that they had a night in Miami ahead of time? I didn't think so, because I feel like it's kind of hard to take the team you just played in the finals last year for granted. Mm. Now, maybe they did. I don't think it really showed. They got off to a fast start.
They did.
Bench kind of let the rope slip, though, in their first stint there in the first half.
Yeah, I was disappointed with the bench at the first half. I was like, come on, y'all. Like, you know, you have a lead, and all of a sudden you want your stars to kind of get that rest, and you let it slip. The shots were not falling. They were good shots now. It's not like they were just taking outrageous shots. Peyton Watson had a couple shots that did not fall. Christian Brown was another one that had shots that did not fall. So, and they let the lead kind of slip, which then the big dogs had to get back in the game and change things up.
And it really wasn't Jokic, because he finished with 12 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists last night in 38 minutes on 5 of 8 shooting. So an efficient night, just not a very active night offensively. Now, when you play Bam Adebayo, he's certainly one of the better post defenders in the league. And out of all of the guys that defend Jokic in the league, he does probably about an average job, which I would say is good for Jokic, right? Because he normally cooks everybody. Yeah. So when Jokic isn't flowing, isn't scoring, well, that's when you unlock the Denver Nuggets, because you have so many different options, whether it's AG or KCP or Jamal Murray. But again, we spoke about him yesterday, and I made sure to give him a shout-out, and he only proved it again last night. But Michael Porter Jr., post-All-Star break, I can call it a hot streak for now.
Yeah.
Are you encouraged? Oh, yeah. I'm encouraged to the point where I'm wondering if he's beginning to turn a little bit of a corner into becoming more of that consistent third star, $30 million guy you paid him to be.
But so why do you think that is, though? All of a sudden, All-Star break comes out just firing, right? Now, he had a couple games, the Celtics, where he didn't show up. It was like more of a no-show. But overall, I mean, I'm pleased at what I'm seeing from MPJ, and I've been banging the table with Zach there saying, I don't see it. I don't see what you guys are seeing out of MPJ, and now I'm starting to see and understand what a lot of people have been preaching.
Well, a couple of reasons, I think. He's now 25, so he's maturing a little bit. You have to remember, he got no college basketball experience. I think he played in maybe 3 games in college. Maybe 5, maybe 3 games, something like that. Yeah, his only year, but he had another back surgery. What did he miss? The first 2 years in the NBA because of back surgery? Or the first year, played a little bit, and then he had to have another one. So, Phil, this is a guy, for all intents and purposes, that probably shouldn't be playing professional basketball anymore. He's had 3 back surgeries. And now he's 25, and this is the longest stretch of his career that he's been able to stay healthy. To my recollection, he's only missed 1 game this year, and that was the game in Sacramento right before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
So I'll just say, I think consistency and health are playing a factor, and he's growing up, man. I mean, I remember myself at 25. I was not the same person at 22 that I was at 25, and I wasn't the same person I was at 25 as I was at 30.
Look, my mom always told me, when you become 25, that's when you start making a lot of your decisions, because your brain starts to grow. You know, you start to grow into what you really want to be and what you want to do. And if that is the case, MPJ starting to figure out himself, figure out what he brings to the table, kind of finding his niche. Because I know he said things in the past where it was like the ball cannot get around to everybody, which is true. You got Jamal Murray, you got Jokic, 2 of the best on the team. Of course, they're going to get theirs. But somewhere down the line, they're starting to trust what MPJ is bringing to the table. Like you said, with the consistency, with showing that, right? Showing that I can go out there and I can produce when need it, if needed. And it's coming around, and it's coming up big for the Denver Nuggets. And if he can do that, when the playoffs come rolling around, they're going to be unstoppable.
Well, they need somebody to pick up some of the slack. We talked about the finals averages for this Nuggets team against the Heat last year. Porter averaged about 9.6 and 8.4 rebounds per game. Bruce Brown was the fourth leading scorer. He had 11.4 points per game, not 14. He had 11.4 points per game. Excuse me. MPJ has to pick up some of that slack, and in 11 games since the All-Star break, averaging 20.5 points, 7.6 rebounds, shooting 54.9% from the field.
You cannot make that up.
It restores order to your big four.
Yeah.
The contracts, you kind of want your production to reflect your contracts. Jokic is king of the mountain. Murray is right there. And then you've got Porter and Aaron Gordon.
And right now, Porter's making more than Jamal at this point.
At this stage, well... The thing is, though, is that his contract happened after, and things have changed in the NBA. But the point is that you're getting more production to match your contracts right now, which, based upon roster construction, the future of the Nuggets is reliant upon your big dogs eating every night.
For sure. The bench now. What you take on the bench?
Well, they had 24 points last night. Nuggets scored 100. I mean, that's a... pretty damn good ratio, you ask me. That's a ratio we don't see every night from this Nuggets team.
Yep.
Jokic isn't going. Murray doesn't have the most efficient night. What did Jamal shoot last night? Jamal was 5 of 14 from the field. Well, that's a perfect opportunity. Reggie Jackson, big minutes down the stretch.
Man, seven. He had 7 points in like a minute. In a minute.
And that's exactly what we just said with Josh and Stoke, is that was the moment that I thought was really... really indicative of what the Nuggets culture is all about. And Malone addressed it after the game, but Jamal and KCP telling Malone at the scorers table, no, let Reggie and CB go. First of all, those guys need a night off. We kind of talked about, hey, you got to buy minutes of rest for these guys wherever you can get it. And not to mention foul trouble, God forbid injury in the playoffs. You're going to have to rely on some of the dudes off the bench, maybe a little bit more than you even want to.
Well, the players get it. The players get it. And sometimes coaches can get so wrapped up in the moment and understanding that they want something. Now, all that bull crap of Malone saying he doesn't want the number one seed, okay, actions speak louder than words. He wants that number one seed, and he's willing to do what it takes to get that number one seed at times, right? Like trying to put Murray back in the game when Murray's like, Coach, I'm stretching now. Like, come on.
He can't help himself.
No.
He just can't help himself.
It's a coach, right? It's a coach. You feel comfortable when you guys are in there. But when you have people like Jamal Murray, KCP are saying, Coach, relax. Trust them. We trust them. When your players are trusting the other teammates, then you know you have something special right there.
It was a great win for the Nuggets. And afterwards, Cassidy Hubbard even brought it up to Michael Porter Jr. post-game on ESPN, for those of you who could watch it last night. She mentioned the Nuggets have 23 clutch time wins this season, leads the NBA. If the game's close, coming down the stretch, one team knows how to win better than you. Right now, they're firing on all cylinders, and it's a whole bunch of fun to watch. I think it's San Antonio up next, and Victor Wembanyama in San Antonio for the Nuggets. But that wasn't the only exciting game last night. How about the finale? Did you stay up for it? We'll discuss it next. What I want, you've got that mind. All right, so I probably was a little too flippant the way I spoke about the snow yesterday, and I'll be the first one to admit it. Matt Smith in for Zach Bye. Phil's in the house. KJ's in the house.
You jinxed everything, man. Now it's coming out as hard.
At least down here.
Yeah.
At least down here, down in DTC, got hammered down here. A good amount of snow. And I was reading the mountains, just absolutely pumped. Eldora, which is the closest skiing mountain up in Boulder up there. Been to Eldora tons of times in my life. Eldora maybe get like 5 inches. Eldora got 30 inches of snow last night. Okay?
Wow.
30 inches. They actually, I read this morning that they weren't even allowing people to go up there because the roads were too snowed in up there in Ned. So Eldora closed today, but 30 inches overnight. Down at Boulder, though, like 8 inches or so.
Yeah.
I mean, not terrible.
Well, shout out to everybody that's out there, especially the truckers and everybody that helps keep the roads clean, man. I mean, these are the days that, you know, your work does not go unnoticed. And definitely for yourself, because you're in Boulder, having to travel here, I was a little worried for you, man. I was like, man, is he going to be able to make it?
Of course I was.
You know, and
nor course, rain, nor sleet, nor snow. That's the part-time motto here at KKFN. That's what it is. That is, you'll always truck through. Thanks for joining us on the text line. Those of you who are out there and motoring about, we appreciate it. Those of you who are white knuckling the steering wheel because, you know, maybe you're just not all too comfortable driving in snow, we love you too. There was a lot of snow on the ice, specifically in the third period last night in Vancouver. Second night of a back-to-back for the Avalanche. So the Nuggets wrap up their win in Miami, 188 last night. And then the Avs get underway. And, Phil, this was the second game of the two-part season series between Colorado and Vancouver.
Yep.
The first one a couple of weeks ago, the Avs won. But Vancouver came in. It was the second night of a back-to-back. And the day before, they just blew a lead in the third period to Minnesota and ended up losing 10-7. And so they came in here, crawled in here up to altitude the next day, and the Avs beat them. It wasn't all that convincing. I didn't think Vancouver's effort was impressive.
Yeah, you think they were tired?
Yeah, they were tired. You could see. Yeah.
Just like, man, let's get this over with. Back to back. Let's go home.
No question. And then last night, the first period that the Vancouver Canucks played last night, who have been on 3 days of rest, was as good a period as I've seen in the NHL this year. And the advanced numbers will tell you that the Avs actually, quote unquote, outplayed Vancouver. Yeah. Well, my eyes tell me a different story. Vancouver all over them in the checking game, physical, neutral zone, forecheck, backcheck, and three goals. Couple of, you know what it was? They wanted it more.
They did.
You could feel it.
They did, man. They wanted it more. They were ready. You know, they weren't on a back-to-back, right? They didn't have to go.
They were 3 days of rest.
Oh, see? They were sitting there drinking pina coladas ready for the Avs, where the Avs had a back-to-back, and they've been dealing with injuries and sicknesses.
They were drinking Tim Hortons. It was Canada, okay? You're new to hockey, so we're just going to teach you.
Is that what it's
pina
called?
Coladas from Mexico. Tim Hortons up there in Canada. They were sitting back.
They were sipping on it.
Slurping their lattes.
Yeah, man.
But you're right, though. And they came out, and what was interesting to me is it was as good a period as I've seen any team in the league play this year. It really was.
Yeah.
The Avs, they had some chances, but it was a low shot, you know, low shot volume period for both teams. I think the first period ended 6-6 total shots.
Yeah.
But Vancouver felt like they just completely outplayed them. It was a playoff-style hockey game. They were checking everything that moved, and they were generating chances. They weren't allowing the Avs to really get off.
Yeah.
You remember yesterday we talked about the last change that NHL teams have at home versus on the road?
Yep, you were describing
where
it.
You can pick your matchups a little bit. Well, Vancouver did that last night. They took the first line completely out of the first period. It was a rough period for the first line. Well, you know. Then they started to grind away in the second.
Vancouver had an opportunity to put three up on the Avs in the first period. Missed the opportunity, which then I was like, oh, man, this is not going to be good. If they could go three up on the Avs, woo-wee.
The way they're playing?
Yes, and that was just in the first period. Now, they got the third goal in the second period, but, man, you know, the Colorado Avalanche were kind of came in there sleeping a little bit, man. A little, sleepy. Probably was going to say, I was going to say something else, but sleepy, man. What you think?
Can you say the other thing on the radio? No? Okay. All right. Well, don't say the other thing then. No, of course they did. The Avs in the first period, first of all, they just got outplayed.
Yeah.
But it was more, in my opinion, about what Vancouver was doing, less about what Colorado was doing, which was eye-opening to me because that shows me Vancouver, if they can take what they did in the first period, bottle that up and take it to the playoffs. I was questioning whether or not they'd be able to play like that for three periods, though. And the Avs called their bluff eventually.
Yeah.
And it was huge. The end of the second, you know, the dying seconds of the second period, Devon Taves picks up a loose puck on the wall, throws it on net, Mikko Rantanen flashes to the doorstep, and here you go. It's now a two-goal game instead of a three-goal game.
All it takes is just one thing to happen. One thing. You know what it reminded me of? Remember when I was playing at the time with the Denver Broncos, we were playing the Chargers.
Okay.
The Chargers were up on us. And I end up breaking that, like, 62-yard.
Yes, I remember
that. You know,
that.
We end up coming back and win. All it takes is somebody to make that big play, right? And that's what Mikko did on top of Manson. Is that his name?
The Taves picking it up off the wall.
No, I'm talking about the fight. The fight.
The fight.
That was another momentum swinger.
I don't know. I don't know if it was
Manson. It was
Manson,
a cat fight.
Manson, yeah, it was just... Well, it's tough because Nikita Zadorov doesn't really want to fight his former team, okay? And he just got traded to Vancouver midseason. Yeah. And Big Z has tons of friends on the Avs. Like, we heard him yesterday speak glowingly about Nathan MacKinnon, calling him the best player in the world. He doesn't want to fight, but JT Miller, there was a big hit, and somebody they felt like had to answer the bell for JT Miller. So he went at Manson, and, you know, neither one of them threw a punch, and Zadorov basically kind of, like, dove and just fell down to the ice. Manson kind of gave him a little cheap shot there on the
Manson
ground.
Manson got on top of him, though.
Yeah, he did. He gave him one on the ground, but it was a nothing. I didn't even think it really mattered. No. But it was what it was to me, Phil, was the Avs consistently sticking to their game plan, and it paid off.
I love it, man.
They were getting pucks on net because here's the problem. When you play against the Avs, and Vancouver played very aggressively defensively last night, how about this number, this stat? 22 block shots from the Canucks. Only 2 block shots from the Avs. Vancouver was clogging shooting lanes.
Yeah.
And we spoke about it on yesterday's show that the 3 games prior to last night, the Avalanche had 132 combined shots on goal. That's a lot for a 3-game stretch. Well, through a period and a half last night, they had about 10, but it's because Vancouver was clogging up shooting lanes. Eventually, you wear the other team down, you call their bluff that they can't play at that pace for 3 straight periods, and the Avs are one of the best, if not the best, third-period team in hockey, and they came on, and what a comeback. The 5-on-3 penalty helped, though.
5-on-3. 5-on-3. I agree with you, man. Having 2 men down for Vancouver, it does help you out, man. Tell me this. Why are we such a comeback team at this point? Like, why have we kind of embraced being the comeback team? I don't like that, man, because at some point you get burnt doing that.
I'll tell you on the other side. Matt Smith in for Zach Bye alongside Phil Lindsay. It's the Fan. So delightful. All right, we got to have a talk, KJ. Let it snow. Holiday music.
It's not holiday music. This is year-round, especially here.
This is year-round.
Especially if you live
in places. Is this on your house year-round, Phil?
Oh, you know what? I don't mind it if it's snowing. I'm okay with it.
You know what I'm saying? Come on, Phil.
Sorry. Don't let Matt crap your style now.
You're Grinch today. You have to understand.
Listen, there's someone, you know, we got to appease all of our drivers and riders and listeners, all right? There's somebody who was like, man, this is the song I was thinking of earlier. I promise you.
Well, to that person, I hope you enjoyed that from KJ. It'll be the last one of the day. All right, Matt Smith in for Zach Bye today. Phil, before the break, asked me why the Avalanche are the comeback kids. And to be honest with you, Phil, they really are. In fact, they're the first team in NHL history to have 3 games in a season where they trailed 3-0, but allowed no goals the rest of the way and came back to win. That's impressive. It happened on November 18th. They trailed at Dallas 3-0, won 6-3, scored 6 unanswered. January 13th, they trailed 3-0 at Toronto, won 5-3. And then tonight, the Avalanche trailed 3-0 at Vancouver, won 4-3. Well, that was last night, rather. Point is, pretty cool to know that they can have that in the back of their minds. God forbid they run into that in the playoffs, because that's the type of team-building win it was. You have to factor in the fact that they were almost missing, as Bednar pointed out after the game, an entire line.
Yes, they were, man.
Zach Parise, no Arturi Lehkonen, and no Jonathan Drouin. We talked about it. He kind of got tagged up in the knee against Calgary. Mm. Missed last night. But the reason the Avs are so good is because that's when the pressure's on. And sometimes 1 out of 82 in the regular season, you guys play, 16, 17 games in the NFL a season, Phil. Yeah. Right?
Every game,
not the same. Yeah. It's not the same. It's a much more challenging mental grind. Maybe it's different, but in my opinion, it is extremely more challenging to gear it up every night. It's a much bigger toll on your body, especially hockey, with how physical the game is. Not that it isn't in football. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that. There's a lot of games.
There's a lot of games, a lot of moving parts. You're on the airplanes. You're at home. So I can see where... I mean, Matt, there's some times where I would go into a game and be like, man, I'm already ready to get this game over with.
Right?
The body just is not feeling it. So I cannot imagine for the basketball players and the hockey players, even though I think they're still, little babies at times. Mm-hmm. It's all about football.
But hockey players are babies? Yeah. You sure about that?
Did you see the fight yesterday?
Okay, that's a bad example. Did you see Nathan McKinnon break his nose and then come out 3 minutes later? That's something that doesn't happen in football.
You're right, because we have a face mask.
Yeah.
Well, they got
shields too, but the pucks sneak up under them.
Yeah,
by the way, they do have shields too. And shout out to Val Nichushkin for using his head last night in the game winner.
Literally using the head.
Where did that puck hit him? It hit him?
Right there in the visor, right? Right there in the face, in the middle.
Face! That's where it hit him, right in the face. Now, the Avs are good because that's when the pressure's on, coming back. And even McKinnon brought it up in the postgame last night. He goes, when you look back at our cup run year, we were almost better when they were down.
Mm.
And it's true. That cup run year in the regular season, there were multiple three-goal comebacks. I still remember from the regular season, Boston, Toronto. You know, there were moments that define a season along the way. And last night against Vancouver for the Avalanche, that was a moment that could define the season.
Was that the biggest moment this year?
We don't know. There's three more matchups with Edmonton left in the next 15 and final games for the Avalanche, and that's Saturday. And that's really right now the two guys running for MVP. MacKinnon is now minus 150 to win the Hart Trophy, and he's going to win the Art Ross. He's 8 points clear of Nikita Kucherov. He's extended his point streak last night. I think it's now 13 games, and Mikko now at 11 games, I believe. So, look, they're rolling, but Saturday they got a couple of days off. They don't play today or Friday. Edmonton doesn't play today or Friday.
Ooh, okay.
And then they both play Saturday night, 8 o'clock puck drop. And, of course, you're going to have to find that, you know, illegally or however you want to go about it if you've got FUBO or whatever or what have you. But
Nate Dogg, Nathan MacKinnon. All right, what is he going to have to, like, Matt, I always sit here and Zach and I sit there and I'm like, there's a defining moment in every MVP player's life where it's like, that's what makes you an MVP, right? It's that one game. That one game that sticks out.
Or a series of them.
Or a series of them that's like, you're going to be MVP. Like Jokic, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be the MVP. And I keep saying that for you know, Nate Dogg, you know, MacKinnon. And it's still neck and neck. So what does Nathan MacKinnon have to do to kind of solidify?
Stay at this pace. When he came back from the All-Star break, he obviously kind of took a little bit of a dip. You know, you kind of geared the engines down. And when I say took a little bit of a dip, I mean maybe like a point a night instead of 3 or 4 points a night. You know, that type of a dip. Because he's playing at an all-world level
He's playing crazy, man.
He is the best player in the world right now. He's got 115 points, 5 shy of Joe Sakic's career Avalanche franchise record.
Uh-oh, he's coming.
Oh, he's coming for him. He'll be there by this time next week before you say Bob's your uncle. So it's the best individual season we're watching right now in Avalanche franchise history, in my opinion. And I think he's going to walk away with the Hart. Now, 3 matchups with McDavid left. You know what I want to see?
Yeah.
I want to see this kind of built up. And if the NHL had any idea what they were doing over there in the marketing department.
Which they don't.
Which they really don't.
It's crazy.
They would build it up like Embiid and Jokic's matchups are built up.
I keep saying every time you turn that TV on, there should be a commercial coming out. Especially with Nathan MacKinnon being there and whoever, you know, he's battling with at the time. Build that up. It's only going to get you more viewers. And NHL is not good with it. The MLB is not good with doing things like that. Like,
awful.
That's what they're missing.
I mean, and you know why it's even crazier? Is because ESPN has part of the NHL contract. But they don't lean into it. Because why? They really don't have the best NHL coverage. TNT dwarfs them.
Yeah.
The year the Avs won the Cup, the Western Conference Finals were hosted by TNT, and the Finals were hosted by ESPN. And I don't know if you remember, KJ, but we were all wishing that the Finals had been covered by TNT because they had the Gretzky and Biz crew, and everybody was here and having a great time. And then it kind of, but it didn't matter because the Avs won the Cup. So
that's what matter.
Exactly. look, there's a ton of response here on the text line that I want to get to. The Broncos, well, are they doing anything today? We're not exactly sure. The breaking news in the last hour or so, Phil, Sam Howell is traded. Surprisingly so, to Seattle. I guess not so surprising because they moved on from Drew Lock.
It's a spitting image of Drew Lock. If you go and look at even how they look. How they look with the baby face and everything else. Like, it's a spitting image of Drew Lock over there. So I'm not surprised that the Seattle Seahawks traded for someone like Sam Howell.
Yeah, especially because Geno's their guy.
Yeah.
They believe in Geno, at least for this year. I mean, we'd heard that maybe they're trying to get up in the first round, but here's the thing. You're already paying Geno. He's actually producing for a number, you know, that makes sense for the money that he's actually getting paid, right? He's producing at a level that the money actually makes sense. So he's a really good bridge guy. He's probably the top of the market bridge guy you could find. Because there's really no long-term plan for Geno.
He wins enough. He wins enough for the Seattle Seahawks at this time.
And they just hired a new head coach with Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator from the Ravens.
Let's see how that goes.
So Sam Howell off the board. The options, they're dwindling. They're limited right now for the Denver Broncos. We were told by Mike Kliss last week that the Broncos would have a free agent quarterback in-house. Kliss joined the boys on the drive, Dover. We're on the drive. Joined the boys. Joined the boys before us. Dover and Stoke.
Yeah.
And he told the guys that they were maybe in on Sam Darnold, and they've been definitely keeping their eye on the market right now. But the price tag for some of these guys is just a little outrageous. Nobody wants to pay $10 million for Sam Darnold right now.
No, it's just it's not a smart move when we're already in a financial crisis.
It's a crisis.
It is, man.
It is a crisis, honest to goodness. It is.
We're giving 52, right? We're giving 53 million dollars this year, right?
Dead cap. It's just a dead cap. Okay. That's what it was. Man. Yesterday, the Broncos decided that they're officially going to split up the dead cap hit from Russ. 53 this year. They're going to take it on the chin, the full rebuild, embrace the rebuild. And I'm curious from Broncos country, okay? How do we feel about the rebuild? Because this is a clean slate here in Denver now. We realize that. We've been wanting to hold this Broncos team to... I've had people come at me, why do you not hold the Broncos to the same standard that you hold the Avalanche to? Well, it's because it's not realistic. Things were dysfunctional. But they're finally wiping the slate clean. And we could talk about maybe the structure of the front office, sure, and that will play a factor of it. But as from a roster construction standpoint, they're working to get back to more or less square one, or at least the real version of what square one could look like for the pieces that they have in place.
So... And I know you hold the Avs and the Denver Nuggets at a high expectation because they've built, right? They've built over years something special, and that's what the Denver Broncos have to do. So what's the expectation for you this year? Like, what are you holding them to? There has to be a standard. You know, it has to start somewhere. Now, you're not going to see a lot of wins with a team that doesn't have anybody on the team right now, obviously, but, like, there has to start building a foundation, a standard, a structure, and what would that look like?
That leads us into our conversation that we're going to have on the other side. Matt Smith in for Zach Bye with Phil Lindsay. It's The Drive.